Once upon a midnight weary, artists of Iowa discovered something quite dreary. In a pandemic year, an evil villain is out to steal the holiday cheer.
No live entertainment? Get out! No way! I'll save it myself if I have to. I'll do it today.
Join Iowa Public Radio Studio 1 and XBK for The Holiday Special, an original musical for a pandemic year, at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, Iowa Public Radio's Barney Sherman will be here to play some music and tell us about the best new classical music releases of 2020. But first, The Butterfly Effect, a debut novel by Rachel Manns McKinney, covers some very familiar territory for many Iowans, especially those who live in Ames. The characters move through the Memorial Union, on campus, Parks Library, Mary Greeley Medical Center, and Ryman Gardens. The cover of the book may fool you into thinking it's a romantic comedy, but while there are funny parts and romantic parts, it's also a book about family, commitment, grief, healing, and forgiveness. Given the setting of the novel, it's not surprising that Rachel Manns McKinney is on faculty in the English and Speech Department at Iowa State University. She is on the line with me now. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Charity. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And let's talk a little bit about the characters in this novel. You have a heroine of the novel, Greta Otto, and she is something of an anti-heroine, actually. So tell me a little bit about her.
Absolutely. So Greta Otto is an entomology PhD student at Iowa State, and she is what her father described her as, prickly. So she does not subscribe to the idea of Midwest niceness. She doesn't feel like she has to follow social niceties very often. And there's a lot of reasons for that that you read in the book, but she's also just a little bit of a grump. And I don't know about you, but I love reading books with a little bit of a grumpy hero. And I think we see those a lot with male characters in literature. You know, people love A Man Called Uwe. But I don't think we get a chance to see too many wonderful grumpy heroines. And so I wanted a chance to write one of them myself.
Well, and in introducing us to Greta, I mean, at least as a reader, I immediately found myself on her side. I was rooting for her. But the more I read, the more I thought, I think I like everybody else more.
I think that's definitely a fair description. There's scenes in the book where I was writing what she was doing and I was like, oh, Greta, this is not okay. But, you know, you have to put your character in those uncomfortable situations for them to sort of be more human. You know, people make mistakes, and Greta definitely makes more mistakes than average, I think.
Well, and she, as you mentioned, I mean, there are things in her past that have shaped her profoundly, a lot of difficulty in her family, and you reveal some of the many layers of that throughout the novel. But she also is a person who, you mentioned prickly, but it almost made me wonder if you were flirting with the autism spectrum or Asperger's syndrome with her, because this lack of emotion and sort of the response to other people's normal emotion is really profound in her.
I think that there are many people who read her that way. And I think that I want people to be able to take what they will from Greta's character in that aspect. I think there are people who are autistic who would identify with those characteristics, but I also think that that range and spectrum is so wide and broad that I wouldn't want to pigeonhole anyone to have those certain characteristics or necessarily say this is a book about an autistic character and that's the focus, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So when we meet Greta, she is on her way home from Costa Rica. You mentioned she's a PhD student in entomology. She's been in Costa Rica. She's working on her dissertation. She's been studying butterflies. And she gets this terrible phone call from home. She learns that something terrible has happened to her twin brother, Danny. And in many ways, he's the only family she has left. And so she comes home to see if she can take care of him or be there for him or possibly be there to say goodbye, because she doesn't yet know what is happening with that. And that brings her back into an environment that she kind of thought that she had closed the door on. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. So Greta had been so ready to do this dissertation work in Costa Rica. You know, she has everything all mapped out and funded. But instead of being able to do that work, she has to take on the task of caregiving, which is not something that comes naturally to her in any way, shape, or form. And besides doing that, she doesn't want to fall behind on her research or, you know, she doesn't have that much extra cash in the bank. So she has to put herself in a situation where she can find some sort of work to do that's hopefully about entomology, but also get paid for it and try to continue on her path for her PhD. So she ends up having to cross paths with an ex-boyfriend who she assumed she wouldn't ever have to work with again, who is running the Ryman Gardens Butterfly Center.
You put this fictional novel in very real circumstances. And I am curious about that. You know, obviously, a lot of people who write novels will place them on a campus of a large Midwestern university. And you're like, well, that's very similar to University of Madison or Wisconsin-Madison or University of Iowa or something like that. But why did you decide that you were just going to name the places and put your characters in Ames?
Yeah, I'd say there are many places that are real in the novel, and I think that was a challenge for me. There are also some places that are amalgamations, and so, you know, the bar that they go to isn't the same bar. But I thought it was important to place things at Iowa State because of the specificity of it and because of the specialness of the place. Touring Ryman Gardens was one of the first key pieces that fell into the puzzle of this novel for me. And I wouldn't have come up with the idea of it without that place. So it just felt so integral to be able to get it right. And I was so lucky to have so many generous people at Ryman and in the entomology departments at Iowa State to be able to help me get it right, to talk to me about what it's like to raise butterflies and to be an entomology student and all those types of things. I was so lucky for their assistance in that research quest.
And you have written a story that is really all about family and relationships, but you have chosen that your main character be an entomology PhD student. And that's something that I can imagine that must have taken a lot of research for you. Was that something you had a background in?
Not at all. And, you know, I never, even 4 years ago, would have identified myself as someone who was particularly interested in insects. I mean, I garden and those types of things, so I'm aware of them. But the more I started researching them, the more interested and sort of obsessed that I got. The book took 4 years to work on, but I'd say that 3 of those years were really just doing research and figuring out more about insects to place in there. So I just sort of fell into a research hole and really enjoyed it. And so I really wanted to challenge myself to write a book that you'd read with your book club with insects in it.
Well, and then you also chose to have Greta's twin brother, Danny, experience a medical crisis that is a very real medical crisis that many people experience. So you had to dive into that whole of research as well. Was that something you had a background in?
No. And that was even more complicated, mostly because brain injury is just such a wide and complex range of conditions. And so, you know, I didn't want to oversimplify it. I think that so many people have so many misconceptions about what it's like to go through that experience, either on the caretaking side or on the person who has the incident. You know, I address in the book what people think about for comas and the fact that comas really aren't what we see in movies and books very often. It's not a settled state. There's a range of comas. You know, there's a scale for measuring the types of comas that people have. And I just thought that exploring those things would help give a little bit more realistic aspect to that.
you have experienced loss in your life, and that was part of what inspired this story. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the idea for this book came from three things. Of course, Rhyme and Gardens, and the idea of not Midwest nice. But it also came from the fact that when I was 8 years old, my brother died from cancer. And, you know, when you're 8 years old, there's absolutely nothing you can do to support your sibling when they're going through a health crisis. So as I've gotten older and I've become a mother, you know, I've taken care of my own children, my parents are aging, my grandparents are aging, I thought about the idea of caretaking so much more clearly. And I wondered what it would be like if my brother had had a health crisis now. You know, how would I have wanted to support him? How would I have been able to step into that place? And in what ways could I have succeeded or failed? So, you know, looking through someone else's eyes and a different character with different challenges than me, I wanted to address that idea of caretaking for someone at a point in life when you wouldn't expect for it to happen, especially when they're your real only support system that you have left.
Well, and you really explore the sibling relationship there as well, which, of course, is not something that, that you have gotten to explore as an adult with your brother because you were so young when he passed away. But was that something you also wanted to explore in a different way than we usually see?
Absolutely. I have two living siblings, and they're both much older than I am. And so we didn't really start to form relationships until I got older. But I can see how we've impacted each other's lives. And I really just think that a sibling relationship is so different and rich and complex. And I love to read sibling relationships on the page because, you know, just like any other type of relationship, there's a zillion ways to write them. So I really wanted to write that twin relationship with just a sweetheart of a brother who really feels it all so deeply and has this wonderful people in his life. And then, you know, a sister who pushes people away technically, except for her brother.
Right.
I just thought that would be a fun dynamic.
And she's not even always very nice to him.
No, she's not.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. I am talking with Rachel Manns McKenney. Her debut novel, The Butterfly Effect, was just published this month, and it tells the story of a woman who is getting her PhD in entomology at Iowa State University. She treads through some very familiar territory here in Ames, but it's a story about family and grief and caring and self-discovery and all kinds of things. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I will talk with Iowa Public Radio's Barney Sherman about the best new classical music recordings of 2020. Of course, we'll hear some music as well. With me right now is Rachel Manns McKenney. She has just published her debut novel. It's called The Butterfly Effect, and she works at Iowa State University in the English and Speech Department. Her main character also works and goes to school at Iowa State University. Greta Otto is a PhD student in entomology, making her way through the world and dealing with a family crisis and a lot of family drama. And I think growing up as well, it's a Greta as a character is someone, and I don't want to reveal anything because there are lots of twists and turns in this book, and it really is a page-turner, Rachel. I really didn't put it down until I was done. But she has been hurt many times in her life, and it sort of feels like she stopped developing emotionally when one of those major blows came into her life when she was about 14 years old. I mean, in so many ways, it feels emotionally like she is a teenager. Is that something you thought about?
Absolutely. Well, and I think also, if you notice the trend in modern literature, the coming of age stories have really happened later and later in people's lives. You know, Greta is nearly 30, and I think you could still qualify this book as a coming of age story. She really is just trying to figure out her place in the world and figure out emotionally how to form those connections and how to be the person she wants to be.
You are known pretty well as a comedy writer or someone who writes very funny things. And there are very funny moments in this book. And there are a lot of moments that kind of make you laugh, but also make you almost cry at the same time because they're funny and true. But you've written a lot of humor. When you decided to tackle a novel and then you took on a, you know, family crisis with someone nearly dying, were you taking a different turn, or what was your vision in doing this?
You know, I think there's always moments of humor, even in some of our darkest days. I mean, we just have to have that lightness. I didn't study entomology for my graduate degree. I studied Shakespeare, and I studied King Lear, and even...
Got a lot of laughs in King Lear.
Oh, right, exactly, no. Right? But, you know, Shakespeare is the master of finding those moments of dark comedy and lightness that have to have that counterpoint. Not that I'm comparing myself to Shakespeare, my goodness, but but I do write a lot of humor. You know, I publish in McSweeney's and those types of outlets. And I think you have to have that amount of humor to keep people sitting there. But also just for the characters to feel human, because even a person needs to find a moment to laugh when it's an uncomfortable or hard time for them.
Was writing a novel something you've always wanted to do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been writing, I think I wrote my first novel when I was 10 in a notebook about a camp, a summer camp, which I promptly lost. But it was about 100 pages long.
Wow.
In a notebook. And so The Butterfly Effect is not the first novel-length project I finished. But it was the first one that was good enough to get all of the pieces in place.
Well, what is that journey like? Because I think a lot of people, you know, a debut novel is obviously a huge accomplishment, but there's just so much work that has to happen before that happens, at least for most novelists. So tell me a little bit about your journey toward publishing a novel.
Absolutely. You know, I never really started sitting down and writing something novel length until after I had kids, which seems like it's
a little backwards. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels backwards, but your time just feels so much more precious when you have children and you have so much less of it. So I finally said, you know, I need to sit down and this is my time. So whether it was 30 minutes a day or an hour a day at the beginning, that's what I would do. And that was my project. And for this particular book, I found it really useful to just sit down and start the first draft during National Novel Writing Month 4 years ago. And I got, you know, my 50,000 words during that November and another 30,000 words after that. And they were terrible words. But, you know, I tried not to do any research for that first draft because I knew if I started doing the research at that point in the process, it would never get done. So I just would put little notes to myself that said, add science here. and so you can understand there were many things that had to be completely adjusted when I actually did the real research. But so many of us feel like it has to be perfect the first time and we'll work on our first 100 words 70,000 times and never move on. So that's what really got me over the hump in starting to finish novel projects.
Did becoming a parent, did that help you in any other ways? I mean, obviously the understanding that time is precious and fleeting, but did it make you more comfortable putting yourself out there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I feel especially as you get older, as you have your kids making fun of you just for silliness, you lose a lot of your self-consciousness too. So, you know, the more silly things we try to do, it feels so, and it's also something I'm so proud of to be able to say to my kids, you know, I did this. We as a family did this. You know, you had your space to play and thank you for letting me write. And here we are. So they're pretty proud too.
And then, of course, you publish in the midst of a global pandemic, so which I'm sure was not part of your plan. And it's been a strange year for novelists, I think, particularly for people who published in March, April mm-hmm. or May. I think a lot of books really didn't see the light of day because they just really got buried at that time.
Absolutely.
This is probably a better time to publish than that was, but there are still a lot of challenges. What's that been like?
It's been so surreal. It definitely has been surreal. I mean, I'm lucky in that, you know, because there is some humor and levity to my book, people seem like they're really pretty happy to pick it up. I've gotten notes that it's nice to read someone else's family drama and to read a character who has no filter. It's just sort of a good way to channel some feelings onto the page. But in some ways, there's been some blessings that have come out of it, too. I've been able to have some interesting online events that I probably wouldn't have even thought of holding if there hadn't been this sudden switch to everything being online. So I've been able to, you know, hold events with bookstores across the country already in just my first week, and get a chance to host events with authors that I just have been friends with for years and loved. And that's just such a blessing.
So I think every author usually has a story about, I showed up at a bookstore and nobody showed up to see me and that kind of thing. Does that happen in this virtual world, or maybe people are a little more intentional about being there?
Oh, thank goodness not. Yeah, no, I don't think I could have even gone on a traditional book tour, even if the world hadn't been in crisis, just especially with three little kids. I just can't pick up and fly somewhere else. So, you know, I'll go and I'll put on my Zoom shirt and sit down and have my book reading. So
we're talking about The Butterfly Effect, a debut novel from Rachel Manns McKenney, who lives in Ames and works at Iowa State University. And what has response been like? I mean, you've had these really intimate opportunities to visit with people who have read your book already because of this weird COVID world that we live in. What's that been like?
It's been so interesting. You know, I try not to read reviews, but of course I'm human. you know, I have found it interesting the people who just say, well, I can't connect to her. She's really unlikable for my main character. And that's kind of part of the point. I really want to write a book where, you know, you don't have to agree with the main character or even think she's extremely lovable at every second in order to enjoy it. I mean, I really do hope that the side characters kind of make up for it, because I think a lot of them are just lovely and fun to write.
So. Oh, for sure. And I mean, you come... And as I said, I was rooting for Greta from the very beginning, but you also come to love her, I think, at least I did.
Yes.
through the book. And it's good to see the growth, and there's a lot of depth to emotion there. I mentioned that if you look at the cover, you might think it's a romantic comedy. Have you had people surprised by the contents?
Oh, very. Yeah, I had no say in my cover. I think it's so cute, but it definitely makes
it
look like a rom-com.
It's a bright yellow with butterflies on it and a couple of attractive men and a good-looking woman. And
the only say I had is that when I looked at the cover first draft, they had Greta wearing heels. And I said, did you read the book? Like... She would not wear heels, so she's wearing hiking boots now. So that's the only input I was able to make on that cover. Another interesting reaction was I was so lucky. Faith Saley gave it a read before it came out, and she just loved it, and she was so sweet about it. But she did say, you did not mention DS9, Deep Space
Deep
Nine,
Space
even
Nine.
Once in the book. Which she said, I'm incredibly offended about that.
Now, wait a minute. I thought you did. So there is a whole lot of Star Trek in this novel.
Yes.
Are you a Star Trek fan, or was that another thing that you had to do a deep dive into for research?
Oh, I mean, I wish I had that excuse that was why I did a deep dive. No, but I'm a late in life Trekkie. So there's a lot of Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek The Next Generation in this book.
I swear there was an oblique reference to Deep Space Nine at some point, which is actually my favorite Star Trek series. But...
I know. Now it's mine, too. I hadn't watched it at the time I was writing. So I was like, I'm deeply embarrassed, Faith. I'm sorry.
Maybe I was just imagining, assuming that someone must be watching it. But what does it mean to you to have accomplished this, to have sort of passed this milestone, something you've wanted to do since you were 10 years old?
I am so thrilled it's out in the world. And, you know, I try to think of it as an opening door. You know, I hope this isn't the last novel I release. But I hope that it gets out there and in the hands of readers and that they truly enjoy it. It's just so nice to to hear people reading it and that it gives some people comfort with a sort of redemptive story this time of year.
Now, you actually teach speech at Iowa State, right?
I do, yep, and business writing.
Okay, and there's this really incredible moment in the book where Greta, again, has just terrible, terrible fear of public speaking. And it's a very visceral feeling when she tries to stand up in front of a crowd and deliver some information. I can just imagine that as someone who teaches speech, that perhaps you've seen something like that. Was that pulled from real life?
Luckily, not exactly that same situation. But, you know, I think even teaching speech for 10 years, I still get those little butterflies. And her butterflies in her stomach are certainly hatching a lot more rapidly than those that I mostly experience. But I would hope that if Greta were in my class, she'd feel a lot better afterwards.
Now, you mentioned how supportive people were at Ryman Gardens. And did you ask permission of Ryman Gardens to be such a really high profile part of this book? Or was that something that you just let them know that you were doing?
You know, it was hilarious how unfazed they were when I said, I'm setting most of my book here. Nate Brockman was giving me the tour.
The butterfly
and,
guy at Ryman
right,
Gardens.
The butterfly guy. Yeah. He was showing me around and he's like, oh yeah, last week some murder mystery novelist was in here talking to me about stuff. He's like, whatever.
although in some ways people might think that you have cast him as one of the lead characters.
Oh no.
In the novel.
He is not Brandon. Don't worry. He's not the butterfly dude in the book. So
he's going to get questions, though.
Oh, poor Nate. I'm sorry for that.
So that's just a casual, normal thing that happens over at Ryman Gardens. They're just in
like
a novel every month or so.
Yes, that's what it seems like. He made it. He's very laissez-faire about the whole thing.
Well, and your characters do cross a line at Ryman Gardens and do something that is completely against the rules. Did they know about that before you published?
So that, you know, that was just something that he had told me that they're not allowed to do. So butterfly breeding is not something that they have permission to do. So I thought it would be interesting to have my characters cross that line, though I'm sure that they would not do that over at Ryman.
So you obviously have a very full life with three little kids and a full-time job and all kinds of other things to do. What's next for you as a writer?
So I've got a couple other works that are finished and hopefully will find homes soon. One's about internet friendships, which has been a joy to write. And then I've got another one that I've got a full second draft of that's about some more complicated families. And it's set in 1998, which guess what? That's now called historical fiction.
No. Oh, that's ridiculous. But okay.
I know, right? I'm like, more reasons to dislike publishing is what this is.
So does that, does having a book published, does that help with your ability to find those moments to write? Or is that something that you've just kind of mastered?
You know, I think that if you try to write every day, it's not going to happen. But if you can teach yourself to write when you can, and that's what I've been working on doing, then you're much more likely to get it done. This year has been a great way to test my commitment to writing. And I've been lucky to be able to find some moments for sure.
Well, yeah, because everybody's on top of each other all the time. And we talk about the isolation of COVID, but if you have kids, it's also very intense togetherness. And I've talked to a lot of people who have found themselves to be really creatively blocked this year because of the onslaught of terrible news and dealing with, I mean, honestly, a lot of people are dealing with depression who have never dealt with depression before. How has it affected you creatively?
You know, I had to do so many nonfiction pieces that were just sort of slated to come out in The Washington Post and Catapult and these other. So I've forced myself to do my pre-publication stuff. And so it was good to have forced deadlines. Without them, it's really hard to get stuff done.
I can relate to that for sure. And so as this book goes out into the world, obviously many, many more people will read it. What do you hope people take away from it?
I hope people take away that, you know, family bonds can be more resilient than we anticipated, to not give up on the people that they love, and to search for forgiveness. I think that's gentleness in our relationships is just something that's felt even more important this year when it's so easy to forget how much we love each other when we can't see each other every day.
And when we can't see eye to eye on so many things too. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Manns McKenney, her debut novel is called The Butterfly Effect. She is on faculty in the English and Speech Department at Iowa State University, and much of the novel takes place at Iowa State University and in Ames, Iowa. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with IPR's Barney Sherman about the best new classical music of 2020. This is Talk of Iowa.